In episode 59 of Tucker Center Talks, I talked to international tennis changemaker Tapiwa Mazunga. Tapiwa was a collegiate tennis player at Florida State and went on to earn her executive master's in sport management organization at the Catholic University of Louvain in Belgium. Tapiwa has held positions in the Botswana National Sports Commission, Botswana Tennis Association, and Botswana Olympic Committee. Currently, she is a development officer in the South African region at the International Tennis Federation. I really enjoyed my conversation with Tapiwa and learning about all the ways she is creating change in tennis, particularly women in high performance roles. I love learning about initiatives from colleagues around the world like Tapiwa that are making a difference for women in sport. I hope someday in the near future our paths will cross so we can meet in person. You are listening to Tucker Center Talks with me, your host, Dr. Nicole Lavoie. Let's talk. Okay, let's talk. Our guest today is Tapiwa Mazunga. Welcome, welcome, welcome to Tucker Center Talks.
Thank you, Nicole. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. I really wanted to talk to you because we have so many things in common as tennis people, tennis coaches, now turned scholars who care very deeply about getting more women into coaching tennis, which we'll talk about. But before we get into all our good work, our collective good work together, why don't you tell me how you got to where you are at as a development director in the ITF? What was your pathway?
Thanks, Nicole. Basically, I am currently working with the ITF as the development officer responsible for the Southern African region. So my responsibilities encompass, I guess, everything towards developing tennis in the 12 countries in Africa that I'm responsible for, from coaching. So it's not just women's coaching all around, facilities, participation, performance, events that happen on the continent that are within the countries I'm responsible for. So those are my responsibilities. And I've been with the ITF since December 2017. Okay, let me just say 2018, January, when I officially started with the ITF. So it's close to 7 years now. Before joining ITF, I was actually working for the Botswana National Olympic Committee. Botswana is where I'm from.
Yeah, I saw that. That looked like an interesting jump from that to the ITF. And I will say for our listeners who are non-tennis people, the ITF is the International Tennis Federation.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Yes. So my career has been in sport management. So I was with the Botswana National Olympic Committee, where I was responsible for the teams that were going to the Olympic Games, as well as sport development in the country, in Botswana, for that organization. And before that, I was actually working with the Botswana Tennis Association as the junior tennis coordinator, as well as responsible for girls and women's tennis with the Tennis Federation of Botswana.
Okay.
And actually, my education, I actually went to Florida State University.
I saw that. Go Seminoles.
Go Seminoles. And studied sport management at FSU. So from there, I worked actually with the Intercollegiate Tennis Association. So I had an internship with the ITA. So that was my first also professional experience. Well, before that, while a student at FSU, I worked with the athletics department. But after college, I went to work with the Intercollegiate Tennis Association for a year up in New Jersey. And yeah, then from there, I came home and started working within the Botswana sports environment. And yeah, worked my way through the Botswana sport environment. And actually, my connections with the ITF go back to when I used to play as a junior player.
Mm-hmm.
I actually used to be a player on the ITF tour, the junior tour, and was also based at the ITF training center.
Oh, okay.
That is the center that develops some of the best players in Africa to try to play professional or get collegiate scholarships. Then when I was working at the Olympic Committee, I found out about the job with the ITF. And since I was at the, I was I wasn't really coaching at that time. I was full time in the office job, but and actually also I just had my son.
Okay.
I had my son then, so I was saying, oh, okay, it could be interesting to get back into tennis. So the job description, so that I fit it. I didn't know if anybody would realize who this was that hasn't been in tennis for a while. But yeah, then submitted everything, submitted my applications, and then got to work with the ITF.
Awesome. So I came across your work with a paper that you wrote with Cecilia and Salmo for the ITF called Female Coaches Initiatives That Drive the ITF Gender Equality Advantage. And so I want to talk to you about this because, obviously I have a vested interest in women's sport coaches in all sports, but particularly in tennis. And I just want you to tell me like how you came to write that paper and let's just start there. So tell us about this ITF program for women coaches.
Okay, so basically the program is the Female Coaches Network, and it's an initiative that we took under the development department of the ITF, or the education section within the development department.
And is that the Female Coaches Network that runs out of the UK? Or is it a different one?
No, it's a different one.
Okay.
Yes. So we named it Female Coaches Network, because the initiative was to get more women coaches globally to interact with each other and learn from each other, and see how we can actually empower each other as women coaches. And it came out actually through COVID. During COVID, the ITF had actually just launched an Advantage All strategy in 2019. It's 2018 when the Advantage All strategy was actually launched. The idea behind it was that this was our component within coaching, the space of coaching, because the Advantage All strategy looks at all areas of tennis. But specifically in coaching, we're trying to see what we can do to empower more women coaches. And we came out with that, it first starts off with everybody networking with each other and communicating with each other and knowing who's doing what and where, what is actually happening in this.
Yeah, that's half the battle. Who is already doing this good work so we don't have to
Exactly.
recreate the wheel?
Yes, exactly. So, yeah, when we first started, it was an issue of getting people together. And what we started off first with was we had an initial webinar, a global webinar. I believe it was in, was it? Yeah, it was during COVID, 2020 most likely, when we had a global webinar on women in tennis coaching, that we actually had different women from different parts of the world to present on their experiences in coaching. And we had quite a good attendance from all around the world. We got national associations to encourage all the women to attend, all the women coaches in their countries to attend the webinar. And we had a big regional representation across all the 8 regions of the ITF. Globally, we actually even had Mary Pierce speak there as well,
Oh, nice.
who's currently on the ITF board as an athletes commission, as an athletes representative, female
Okay.
athlete, former athlete representative. And we also had women coaches who are coaching on the junior tour as well as the professional tour actually speak at the webinar as well.
Wow.
So there's a chance to, for the first time, we know that webinars have been happening obviously in the US, in Canada, in the UK, in Australia, which those countries have actually already well-established women coaches initiatives and strategies and networks. But we felt that where the development of the ITF comes in is to empower nations that are under-resourced and
Underserved, yes.
underrepresented. Yes, to come up. So that was our idea of bringing out other women from other countries as well, mainly to experience as well from those that are already doing it. So we even had people from Tennis Australia speak, Tennis Canada also speak on their experiences and so forth.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's how we started.
Let me ask you this. So you're starting this in 2019, 2020, when there was a lot going on in the world. So you're doing this all virtually. And I'm looking at the goal of the ITF to have 30% of coaches globally be women by 2024. So it's almost the end of 2024.
Yes.
So how are we doing? Do we know?
Yes, actually, I don't have it in front of me right now, unfortunately, at the top of my head, but the Global Tennis Report actually just got published
Oh,
at the end of
okay.
November, which believe that our number of female coaches globally is just under 30% currently, just under.
Okay.
But there's an increase from the
Yeah.
21% that
Yay.
that we had. And the knowledge we have, or the data we have on that number, is based on information that the ITF collected deliberately from national associations globally.
Okay.
So this is data that's coming from 200 nations, and
Wow.
it's them submitting us that information that we have so many coaches, we have so many co female coaches, we have so many female coaches that are registered with us. So yeah, that's what we have, and it's still the number. We haven't reached our threshold, but yeah, I'll check for you, but I believe it's around 28% currently.
That's pretty good. Yeah. And for those that aren't familiar as you and I with the lack or the underrepresentation of women tennis coaches, especially the higher up you go, the higher level, high performance, Olympic, pro, high performance levels, there's fewer women. So, as the job becomes more visible, lucrative, sort of the jobs people want, you have fewer women. So I love the initiatives that you're doing with the Female Coaching Network, the coaching courses, the regional coaching conferences by the ITF, some supporting events, and giving scholarships too. And then working with WISH, the Women in Sport High Performance Program. Can you tell me a little bit more about that piece?
Yes, the ITF is actually one of the first international federations to be part of the WISH pilot program. That the initiative with WISH is partnered with the University of Hertfordshire and the International Olympic Committee to try to get more women coaches at the highest level at the Olympic Games. And so ITF was one of the first international federations to jump on board and actually have coaches. Women coaches that we have from around the world, especially from these nations that are underrepresented, to take part in this program. And so far we've had, I believe it was just three intakes of the WISH, and we were at three classes of the WISH program, and we already had female coaches that came from all parts of the world. All the regions of the ITF have been represented.
Great.
Through the WISH program, we have a coach from South Africa, India, Brazil, Lithuania, all these nations that we have what we call the ITF CHP or Level 3 coaches.
Of which you're one. I saw that.
Yes. So we have them be part of the WISH program. And the good thing about the WISH program, if you don't know much about it, is that it provides them with enhanced leadership skills and the confidence to be able to of course they are able to coach at a high level, but enhanced skills to be able to take on the challenges that come with coaching at that highest level.
Yeah.
So we're really excited about that partnership, and we believe we'll be carrying that on going forward.
Yeah, and I saw over the summer with the Olympics in Paris, I saw a lot of posts about the WISH program of women who had gone through those, and it's all sports, it's not just tennis. And some of those women that were in the WISH program were coaching at the Olympics, and that was pretty cool to see. Were any of those tennis coaches there coaching at the Olympics that you know of?
I don't know that we had tennis coaches. I don't think we had tennis coaches that were there.
Okay. But yeah, that's a great program and a really good model that I know a lot of the women that designed and developed it, so I'm familiar with that. But have you participated in the Wish yourself?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
No, I haven't participated in the WISH. I'm actually not an active
Ah,
coach
okay. Gotcha.
currently, as you could be. Yes, with my job with the ITF is mainly around organization and management and development.
What do you hear from the coaches about that initiative, the WISH program, or any of the other initiatives, what is really resonating with women to try to get them into coaching at a high level and keep them there?
Yes, what we got, not just from the WISH program, but even women who we have been getting to get, for example, we have scholarships for them to go and do higher level courses in Spain. The ITFCAP and CHP is a great appreciation that obviously as women, we are prioritizing them to be empowered further. So, I mean, the feedback that we get is the appreciation, obviously, for the opportunity. And having a dedicated program like the WISH actually helps to help enhance their confidence
Absolutely.
when they get back into the workplace. I mean, I've personally gotten feedback from one of the coaches who was part of that. She was part of the second cohort from South Africa, and she's really said to me that, you know, that really changed her perspective on not just coaching on court, because it's not just about coaching on court. You know, it's more leadership skills and how you manage with environment, how you get confidence when you are working with not just players, but even your male colleagues and the rest of the stakeholders that
Yes.
you deal with on the day-to-day as a coach.
Yeah, I mean, we can, hit a slice backhand down the line. We can teach that. We can teach strategy and tactics, but it's all the other stuff that women have to deal with in the workplace around gender bias and male privilege and male leaders and being silenced and not taken seriously. That those are all the skills that women need to survive and thrive if they want to coach at a high level. And some of the data that I'm looking at right now, which actually is specific to tennis, we did a survey a couple of years ago and got 1,200 women globally to fill out the survey, and we're just now analyzing it. But the ideas of this overwhelmingly male organizational culture and women feeling like the outsiders, not taken seriously, feeling kind of harassed and as second-class citizens, and their leadership styles not being appreciated, or they're being relegated to, and this might not be particular to the ITF, but the women that some of the women are like, we only get to coach the little kids, the non-serious athletes, we never get the high performance, we never get the high performance boys or juniors, and like this limits our career. So it's really interesting to dig into that data and then see the work that you're doing on the other end organizationally to create change.
Yeah, I mean, that would be a very interesting feedback or the study to be able to get those results once it's been completed to actually see what the main issues are with regards to how women feel if they are part of the environment or how they're treated as part of the environment, because that has a big impact on whether they stay, you know.
Absolutely.
And actually, I'm also currently pursuing my PhD.
Well, good luck to you on that.
Yes, definitely I feel the good luck.
Ooh, yeah. What are you just starting?
I've started my second year now.
Okay, so you're in
So,
it.
but it feels like I've just
Yep.
started.
Yep.
So it's mainly around African women in tennis.
Oh, great.
And so it's mainly pursuing careers in tennis coaching, administration, as well as players. You know, so definitely like saying the aspect coaching is a main career within the tennis ecosystem. And obviously our numbers are not very good coming from continental Africa. So some of what you've mentioned right there, finding out through research what are some of the underlying issues that could be there would be quite significant to try for us to come up with viable solutions going forward.
Yeah, and I think it's also interesting, well, to get your perspective of like, okay, here's the data, but how does this translate similarly or differently across cultural contexts? Because I'm guessing there are some universal things like sexism and harassment and pay inequity and the old boys club and, all the things that women deal with as coaches, but maybe there's some specific ones too, particular to your context. So we'll have to have a follow-up conversation on that. So, what are you doing with your dissertation? Do you know yet?
Not yet quite. I mean, it's quite broad, but the main idea for me is to see where the similarities are, and also to see where the differences are, because Africa is a big continent, so there's different aspects of region-wise, culture-wise within there as well, and also to see what differences there are for Africa compared to the rest of the world. So that's mainly what my dissertation is going to be around.
I love that. I can't wait. And please let me know if I can be of any help. So, how did you land on this topic of women and tennis, women and sport coaching? Like, how'd you enter that world?
In terms of my research topic or in general?
Yeah, in terms of your research interests and being part of this ITF paper on getting more women into coaching and keeping them there, what's your passion around that?
Yes, I mean, it obviously personally resonates with me as a woman who has been coaching, and I was a coach on court. But I mean, I do coach here and there, but as I said, I'm not full-time coaching. So it has been a sticky, I'll say a sticky thorn in my backside for a while that, obviously being in tennis, you can see that there are fewer women coaches. And being in Africa, to be honest, you become one of the few minority. You become the real minority as a female tennis coach. And even as a female tennis coach, whether not even at an organizational level, even in aspects, even culturally, people wondering, why are you coaching? You're not going to get, isn't it exhausting? Why don't you, it's sometimes not seen as a viable career. Let me just put it that way. Yes. Especially on our continent. So it's to try to dispel some of that. And I mean, some of the discussions we had during some of the webinars that we held in 2020, 2021, and 2022, the virtual webinars, was actually finding out that women could actually, instead of maybe trying to find a job in coaching, but to establish your own coaching business. So that was some of the ideas that came out from some of the women. And we actually had a webinar that was dedicated to women who are already running their own coaching businesses around the world to present on what they're doing and network with, I mean, do the webinar around that. Because we're always talking about getting jobs, getting jobs. What about creating your own jobs?
Right, because if it's a male system built by men for men, and they don't want to hire women, or they feel that women are less competent, or they can't hit as well as the men, or whatever bias they bring in, is that, go develop your own coaching business, go outside the structure and circumvent the discrimination. And I'm guessing some of those women are highly successful.
Yes, no, they are. I mean, there were some that have been running their businesses for 20, 30 years that were part of the webinar. Some are fairly new businesses, but just that aspect of first getting the courage to do that.
That it's possible, you can do it.
Yes. And I mean, we also have those that are coaching at some of the best academies in Africa as being some of the best coaches actually at those academies in Africa. So these are some of the women that we have been actually trying to see if we can get others to network with them. For example, just at the regional coaches conferences this year, what ITF has been doing, not just this year, but in the past couple of conferences, is also provide assistance for more women coaches to attend the World Coaches Conference and the regional coaches conferences. And especially now this year, we decided to move the network from not just virtual, but to face-to-face.
Oh, great.
This was the first year that we had the regional coaches conferences back that were not virtual. So we had eight conferences around the world where all of them actually either had, we call it informal networking sessions, but also there were panels on women tennis coaching and so forth, where women got the opportunity to discuss coaching within their regions.
Yeah, and these eight that you did around the world, are they women only?
Not all of them were women only, actually.
Okay, but women focused?
Yes, it was women focused, but not women only.
And all women speakers?
No, some of them didn't just have women speakers.
Okay, all right. Because that's one of the things that I've found really powerful in my own work and from the research and practically is this idea of like the wish. It's women focused, women led, creating a safe space and a community where you can come together and feel safe and supported and valued. And so I love this idea of these regional workshops. And then you would come together at the World Congress or World Conference. And when is that every other year or is it every year?
Every other year.
Okay.
So the last conference, world conference we had was in Colombia last year, and they actually we had a women's tennis panel, which was not just for women coaches, you know.
Right.
Men attended. Men were there
Yeah.
and attended the panel, which was part of the program as well. It was one of the sessions in the program. So it was good also to be able to have that interaction on women in coaching, as well as women's tennis, at a broader level outside of just being exclusively just women.
Yeah. Well, and we need male allies and men that will help us succeed and change the culture around the world because they are the majority and they have most of the positions of power. So it's important to start involving them as well. And I like that. In the abstract I read from your paper is that the World Conference, you went from 24% speakers were women to 38% the next time you hosted it. So that's real progress.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. I mean, that is one of the key areas as well for us, is to deliberately actually create a platform for more women coaches to also share their knowledge and their expertise on a global level.
Yes.
And they were not just speaking about women's tennis.
Right.
They were speaking about tennis. You
Tennis.
know, some were talking technique, or some were presenting on tactics, some were presenting on technique. You know, we're having a female to come and speak because they are a female and they're going to speak about women's tennis. No, it was based on their expertise in the area.
I love that. I love that. Okay. So, what has been the biggest challenge in the work that you've been doing around getting women into coaching and keeping them there? What's been your biggest challenge?
I'll say my biggest challenge, what I've seen, is mainly women not feeling like they want to stay or belong within the profession. So that is where, especially the place in where I work or operate, I'll be specific to that because I have more interaction there with female coaches. Is trying to get them to have more of the confidence. And I'm especially talking to them, the ones that are number one starting in coaching, those that are in their mid-career in coaching. Not necessarily those that are now at the high performance level, as you mentioned, because they're already there. But the big challenge is the ones that are coming into what I've seen, the young ones coming into the profession of coaching and making it a career for themselves and pressing forward. It's one, it's the confidence that I've seen. There's quite a bit of lack in that space, and it's just to work on encouraging them to realize that they're doing okay, you know, and to just keep striving. But it's, yeah, I think it's mainly around that. But I've seen also that it feels easier. Now I'm not talking from any research base, but just from how I feel interacting with different female coaches. It seems like it's easier for those, confidence-wise, especially for those that had played at a certain level of the game.
Of course. They have more athletic capital, be taken
Yes.
seriously. Oh, you can coach because you played at a high level,
Yes.
which is so much a part of gender bias because men could have played in when they were 10 years old and quit and then coach at a high level and nobody ever questions their competencies.
Yes, so I've seen that it seems easier for the women that can say, when they're starting out as a coach, oh no, yeah, she used to be a top 100 in the World Juniors. She used to play on the professional tour, you know, for them to be working, for example, with a national association or an academy or a club, and actually have the confidence around with the parents and the players
Right.
that she can do that job. Yeah, that's the first thing that they'll point to. Oh, you know, she used to play at that level, you know.
Yeah. And wouldn't it be nice if we didn't have to be like, oh, but she played at a high level, you know, that you should take her seriously, that we didn't have to always have to qualify that. And I think I get this a lot too with the confidence issue with women in coaching is, you know, we often get blamed. Like, oh, well, women aren't confident enough and women should be more confident. And yes, and why would women feel confident if they're in a system where they don't feel seen or valued or heard or respected? That doesn't make people feel confident. That doesn't generate feelings of confidence when I'm like, yeah, you're sort of a second-class citizen. You can, I just, the confidence issue to me is more about empowering women and coaching them up, but also simultaneously changing the system that we're sending the women into so they can feel confident. Once they get there, they feel supported. And that's a real challenge. And that's why, you know, I wanted to talk to you because you're actually doing this work. So thank you for that. It's making a difference. And being in the tennis community, I hear about these programs a lot, and I'm excited that the resources and the time are being dedicated to making this happen. Okay, we're going to switch gears. You've written this paper about getting and keeping women in tennis coaching. You're doing your PhD, so and you're early on, you're early in the weeds right now. What advice would you give other young women who want to seek a similar career pathway or do what you're doing?
I mean, it's number one, I'll say starting off with the passion that you have for what you are doing is what, I mean, that's what drives me, feeling that what I'm doing or what I want to do can genuinely make a difference. A lot of, I'll say people who maybe don't particularly appreciate research or academia and so forth a
What?
lot.
People don't appreciate our work?
They
No.
think you guys are sitting there asking us for questionnaires and filling out questionnaires, and then we don't know what you're doing with it. And then you're putting up a big paper, and then what? But information is critical. I feel that, you know, if somebody wants to get into this, not just for women in coaching, but in any space, women who want to get into academia or even getting into coaching. It start off first with having that passion, that drive to do it and really want to make a difference.
Yeah. So you mentioned before we started recording that you are reading the best-selling, award-winning book, Women in Sport Coaching, and it was came out in 2016, so it's getting a little dated now, and you're reading it from a different perspective, a different lens. So and I mentioned that I get asked like, when are you going to write the second version? I'm like, I don't know if I want to, but if we were going to write the second version, what are you seeing we need to add to the knowledge body of women in sport coaching?
Yes, I mean, it's a very good reference point book. I mean, it has everything, pretty much almost everything that I actually was saying to my supervisor. I'm not sure if I want to read other things. You know, it's got pretty much everything I was looking for. But I think that what we could add as well into it is more information around women in sports coaching at different parts of the world. Like I'm saying, taking into consideration cultural context, socio-economic context as well. But as I mentioned with the research that I'm doing, you'll find that, like in Africa, for example, pursuing coaching as a career, not in all countries, but in quite a few countries on the continent, not just coaching, but even administration, you have to be a volunteer pretty much.
Yeah, you're not getting paid. You can't make a living.
Yes, in quite a few countries, unless you are in Africa, quite a few countries, unless you are working privately, perhaps, for example, running as a business or a contractor in a country club,
Right.
and your passion is, for example, to be coaching kids at the grassroots level, nobody's going to pay you for that,
No.
you know. So it's some of these the cultural context around the profession of coaching from different parts of the world, you know, maybe finding out if there's some what's happening in Pacific Oceania is a difference from what's happening in Europe. North Africa is different from even Central Africa and South Africa,
Right.
definitely. So maybe those parts of it as well. Actually, looking at as well, even at the ecological model, some of what I'm thinking of looking into as well is whether the ecological model is can be contextualized to Africa. You know, does it fit in with, I mean, I saw the work that was done in South Africa previously with the ecological model, with the barriers to sports coaching, the BSQ.
By Kubaye.
Kubaye, yes, and that was a perspective, obviously, in South Africa, what they did, and it worked well for them. That's something that you could maybe look into getting more information around the different contexts of sports coaching around the continent, and even different sports. Perhaps there's differences as well, in different sports.
Yeah, I've thought about that a lot because most of the coaching literature on women in sport coaching is very US, UK, Canada, Australia, and very little in other countries. So yeah, that's a huge gap that needs to be filled. And then what are the similarities in the ecological model of barriers and supports for women around the world, but what are the maybe specific cultural contextual differences by country? Because if we knew that, then we could say, okay, this is one strategy that would work in every context because all women are experiencing this. But here in my country, this is a little different. So I got to tweak it a little bit. And then because it's not a one size fits all solution, that's why this is so challenging. Is if it were a one size fits all solution, we would do that. Well, we would, maybe not other people would, but it could be done.
No, definitely. I mean, like you're saying, with a lot of the literature is mainly, UK, US, Australia, Canada. There's a bit on Africa, but it's what I've seen in South Africa, you know, with a few scholars that do in South Africa. But in Africa, in general, in sports, it's a lot on administration, you know, administration and leadership.
Not as much on coaching.
Yes, and not necessarily on coaching.
Well, I may be tapping you to contribute to the next volume of Women in Sports Coaching once you're done with your dissertation, because we don't want to distract you from that.
Yes,
Because you're in
please.
school and you have a full-time job. So you
Yes.
and you're a mother. So that's enough on your plate for right now. Okay. So I have so enjoyed this conversation and I really hope that we will keep in touch if I can be of any help and I want to continue to learn what you're doing so we can, work together to create systems change, which is what's really needed in the world of tennis. And I'm going to end. We're going to end with a speed round here. Okay. There's three questions and there's no right or wrong answer. All right. Okay. So, question one, what is at the top of your music playlist right now?
What did I listen to just now? Chris Brown.
Chris Brown. Okay. All
Yes.
right. Okay. Who is your favorite badass woman right now?
Favorite badass woman right now.
Yeah.
My mind is going everywhere.
I know.
When you're saying who's your favorite, I just thought of Serena Williams
Yeah,
earlier.
absolutely. She fits the mold. She is a badass, not only the greatest tennis player of all time, but businesswoman now, entrepreneur, advocate for social justice and all the things that she does. And I don't get starstruck very often, but Serena Williams is at the top of the list of people that I would like to meet someday. And I've had two shots, and the both times she was, one she got COVID and one she was sick because she was pregnant. And I'm like, no. So Serena, if you're listening to this, you're on my list of people to meet someday. Yeah. Okay. And okay, last question. Who is a woman scholar that's influenced or impacted the work you're doing right now?
I can't really think of too much
Okay.
right now.
Maybe as you dig deeper into your doctoral work, one will emerge. Yes. Okay. Well, I have really enjoyed our conversation, and I'm just going to say, and that's a wrap for this episode of Tucker Center Talks. Be sure to check out our many free evidence-based resources on our website at tuckercenter.org and follow us on LinkedIn or Instagram. This podcast was produced by Tucker team member Lindsay Hofer. Thank you, Lindsay, and thank you for listening to Tucker Center Talks. As we wrap, give yourself grace, support others, and let the data tell the story in ways that help us all accelerate systems change for girls and women in sport. I'm your host, Dr. Nicole Lavoie, signing off to make a difference in the lives of girls and women in sport.